You're listening to a podcast from funnyinthemiddle.com.
Hi, we dig music, and because of this, we've kept the music in our podcast at a low background level because we believe that you should support the artist by buying their records and going to their gigs. If you want to hear the songs in full, we've made Spotify playlists of all available music featured in each episode, which you can find on funnyinthemiddle.com. You can also join in the discussion on Facebook and Twitter by searching at WeDigMusicPcast. Finally, if you dig what you're hearing, please subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice, write a review if possible, and tell all your friends that you think would enjoy it. Anyway, enough of my yakking. On with the podcast.
Hello and welcome to We Dig Music. I'm Ian, and with me are my comrades and co-hosts, Tracy.
Hello.
And Colin.
Hello.
Each episode, we pick a band, we pick a main band and a support band for each letter of the alphabet. Today, we are talking about the letter
S. And a snake.
Yes, the support band is The Start. Yes. I know it's technically cheating, but if you're going to Dewey decimalise it, it's fine.
True.
And The Smiths.
Yes. So,
yay!
Yeah.
Not see, Sepultura, no. Not Slayer.
We'll get to them. We'll get to them one day.
Not Snubnose 32.
That don't like metal, we'll get to Sepultura and Slayer. It's cool.
All the people that don't like metal are ball back.
So, yeah.
Metal is life. Let us proceed.
Indeed.
Colin, tell us about The Start.
Okay. Start are an American alternative rock band.
Yes.
Formed in California in 1998 by Amy Echo on vocals and Jamie Miller on pretty much everything else. There are other musicians that play with them live.
We know that there are other musicians. We are other musicians.
There are other musicians in The Start,
okay,
that play live with them, but on record it's pretty much Jamie.
I knew that's where that sentence was going, but I just wanted to jump on it.
Best to clarify.
Funny, yeah.
Best to clarify, definitely. Yeah. We're also going to talk about the bands that The Start rose from the ashes of.
Yes.
Which was...
it's a pity that you couldn't all see that amazing rose from the ashes hand gesture that Colin just did. It was very good.
It was, yes. So, Amy Echo, formerly of a band called Human Waste Project.
Who were great.
And Jamie Miller, formerly of The Snot.
The Snot.
No, The Snot.
Was formerly the drummer in Snot.
Who were also great.
Who were also great. So, I mean, at least one of those other bands begins with an S, so we're not even bending the rules that much.
Not really.
It's fine.
Kind of a little, but not much.
So, The Start were originally called Hero.
I remember that.
But
we'd have been talking about them way earlier if we'd stuck with that.
We would have, but they had to change the name because I think there was another band with the same name.
Ah.
Although, if you Google The Start, there are at least two other bands called The Start.
But do the other bands have spaces?
I don't know. But The Start have spaces sometimes.
They? Oh, but sometimes.
Yeah. I'm sure on Shakedown it's The Space Start.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but I don't know.
Oh.
But yeah, they were called Hero initially, and then had to change the name to The Start. They released their first record, Shakedown, on Geffen Records.
It was quite a different proposition from either of their former bands.
Yes, Although there were still elements of it in Human Waste Project.
That's because you can't sound like Amy Echo then join another band and say we sound completely different.
This is true. She's a very distinctive vocalist.
Yes.
I think some people probably don't like her vocals very much.
But they're dickheads.
Those people are wrong. I love Amy Echo's vocals. She's amazing. So Human Waste Project, first of all, I think we should talk about.
Yes.
I got into Human Waste Project in 97, which was the year that they released their debut album, well, their only album, Elux.
Did you get into them from Dog being on a Kerrang CD?
I was already interested in them.
Because I didn't like that song.
I loved it.
I like it now, but I didn't at that.
They were being talked about in Kerrang loads.
Yes.
Before that. Kerrang magazine were absolutely hyping Human Waste Project. And I think it was because having a very attractive female singer sells copies of the magazine.
Yes, yes, it does. And then they put that picture of her kissing Raina from Coal Chamber. Was it Raina from Coal Chamber or was it?
Yes, it was.
Yes, it was. And
yes.
And teenage boys exploded.
I remember that picture.
I maybe shouldn't have used that term.
Looking back, it was horribly exploitative.
It was.
What Kerrang used to do a lot of they'd got three. They'd got Amy Echo, they'd got Raina from Cold Chamber, and they'd got Tari B from Manhole, who later changed the name to Tura Satana.
Yes.
And they used to basically have pictures of them in as often as possible, because the vast majority of the readers of Kerrang were teenage boys.
Yes.
Which
yes.
I was at the time, and I very much appreciated it.
Same,
Kerrang,
same.
Thank you very much.
My brother used to get Kerrang.
in modern society, it's kind of unacceptable, but
yes.
At that point in time, it was a different time.
Different times. But yeah, I got really sort of interested in what they sounded like as well, because I was reading these reviews and they were explaining how, you know, they were coming from the sort of nu metal scene and they were part of that scene, but that they were more sort of alternative. There were goth elements, there were pop elements in there, they were taking influences from The Cure and Susie and the Banshees,
which obviously gave you a massive musical boner.
Yes, because that's my kind of thing.
Did I miss a pod announcement somewhere? Because there was no Human Waste Project on the research playlist.
Yes, there was.
Yes, there was. There was the entire album Dropboxed to you, along with the complete discography.
Oh.
Tracy's not done her homework.
I did not listen to that one.
Your facetiousness has come around and bit
busted.
You in the ass.
I listened to the...
Also, we
Spotify
played you
playlist.
A bunch of Human Waste Projects last time we recorded.
You did, but like... I didn't listen to anything in between. And, that was Dropbox to me.
Yes, it was.
Sorry.
Same with Shakedown by the Start, which isn't on Spotify, and their latest single.
I haven't listened to those, sorry.
Bloody hell.
Well, we have, so that's all good. So...
Yeah, you just stay quiet in this bit.
So back...
And when we circle round to the start...
Back in 1997, the internet, you couldn't really listen to music on it. You know, you couldn't just go and download a track.
Yeah, like you had to really want to do it. Like, seek it out, download it, hope that it was A, not a virus, B, a decent version of it, C, actually the song you were looking for.
Yeah, but I couldn't even do that. I never downloaded anything at that age. I didn't know how to.
Ah, well.
I didn't. Sort of
Colin is a Luddite.
Oh, pretty much. Well, we'll get into that in a minute with the start, because there's a related kind of thing with that. So Kerrang, one of their CDs had Dog.
It was just quite pop punky for me.
It was sort of, well, kind of garagey.
Yeah, well, I think the first song that pulled me in was either Exit Wound or Shine.
Yeah.
Because the guitarist in my band at that point in time had the album and taped it for me.
Yeah.
I didn't know until I bought the album later that he taped it in a different order and then missed off a few songs.
Oh no.
So like, yeah, I put the CD on and I was like, this is in a completely different order. What the fuck? Why have they changed it? Wait a second. They probably haven't changed it. God damn it, Carl. What are you doing?
Did you just put it in alphabetical order?
No, you just put it in the order of the tracks that he liked.
That he liked.
I hadn't even heard Elektra for years.
Right, okay. How did he not like Elektra?
I don't know.
That song's amazing. But anyway, there was a three-track promo cassette that Kerrang sort of mailed out to people, which I didn't manage to get a copy. Somebody I went to school with had it, and I taped it off them. And then, because the album I don't think came out until after I'd seen them live, because they
played Ozfest, didn't they?
That was much later on, because that was their final gig.
What, the UK Ozfest?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Shit.
By that, basically,
I was at that, and I didn't watch them.
So the album was released in, I think it was January '98.
Yeah.
I saw them in December '97.
Ah.
When they were supporting Cold Chamber. A gig that I will always remember, because you know when you're younger and your dad says you can't go out without a coat, you'll get pneumonia.
Yeah,
I went out without a coat and I got pneumonia. it was Wolverhampton Civic Hall in December in the snow, and I was like, I'm just going to wear a t-shirt, it'll be fine. And yeah, got pneumonia.
See, I didn't go to that because I was done with Cold Chamber at that point in time. I'd seen them supporting Machine Head and they were great,
which was about 2 months before.
Yeah.
I think
Cold Chamber were really
very
really,
short shelf life.
Yeah.
But yeah, I basically went, I liked Cold Chamber, but I loved Human Waste Project.
Yes, really. Human Waste Project is like 1,000 times better.
And
still
it's
listen
a
to
terrible
the album
name.
It is
band.
Though. I think that might be part of the reason that they never made it big.
Yeah.
Because you can't imagine someone on radio, you know, every now and again you get a breakout rock song on the radio.
Yeah.
Human Waste Project had those songs.
Yeah, for sure.
One Night in Spain is a massive pop song. It still remains one of my favourite songs of all time.
Yep.
And you can't imagine a radio DJ being taken seriously going, and here's the new song from Human Waste
No
Project.
But you can imagine them putting that on and people going, what the fuck was that?
Exactly.
That was amazing. I need to know what that was.
Exactly.
Instantly, right away. But then again, bands with shit names have been not that Human Waste Project was a shit name, although
almost literally
the implication is there, but yeah, like I like, there are bands with worse names.
Oh yeah, yeah,
that's
famous names. Snot.
I'm not saying Snot was a worse name.
No, neither of them are enticing to the mainstream, are they?
Not so much. I feel like Snot's was deliberate in that.
Yes, yes, definitely. But so, to end the sort of Human Waste Project story, basically they put out the album, and within 2 or 3 months, their record label, which was Hollywood Records, which was owned by Disney, had a spring clean and just dropped a load of bands. So they had no more tour support or anything like that. Cold Chamber took them back out on another tour of America, where they basically, they just said, look, come out with us, sell t-shirts, sell your merchandise. And from that, they managed to finance being able to come to the UK to do the Ozfest, which I was on holiday for, and I was absolutely fucking gutted about. I was 16, and it was the last holiday that my parents said I had to come on with them.
Yeah.
And I was like, fucking Ozfest. And yeah, so I missed that. But Ian, you were at that, weren't you?
I was at that.
Yeah, so I believe there were t-shirts on sale for Human Waste Project that said fuck Hollywood Records on them.
Nice.
Which is pretty cool. And yeah, that was their final ever gig. Until they've done a couple of reunion ones later on. So,
did they call themselves The Start because it was a restarting a project?
Yes. It was Amy Echo's mum suggested that band name when they needed a new band, because they knew that Hero couldn't be it. So, concurrently, at the same time, you had Snot, who, again, were part of the new metal.
But they were also, like, they were a lot more punk rock.
They were more, they were punk, hardcore, mixed with a bit of hip-hop and even a bit of jazz.
Yeah.
And a lot of funk as well in there. There was a lot of
Snot, the song itself.
There's
is
some
just
really loose rhythms going on.
Jamie Miller, his drumming's amazing. So
yep, that whole breakdown in Snot with the little rap break and
yes,
the drums, yeah, that's just one of my favourite bits.
So Snot were Human Waste Project's friends. They did a lot of touring together. While they were touring, Amy and Jamie, with their matching names, got together, and they've sort of been together ever since. So Snot, really sad reason that they ended. There was a Lynn Strait, their singer, was involved in a car crash.
Yes.
He got hit by a truck, which killed him. And also his dog Dobbs, who's on the front cover of the album.
Yeah.
Aww.
And a lot of people are all really Dobbs always gets the bigger R.
Yeah, it is both of them are.
It's terrible, very sad.
Tragic things, but yeah, like. Oh, it's in the videos. Are stupid as well.
Yeah,
sorry, stupid.
Stupid.
Looks like a cool dog.
But Ian introduced me to Snot by we used to.
See, that's
DJ
also
together.
A terrible band name, by the way.
It is. They both are.
It is, but like that also has one of the best album openings in the world.
Say something about the record.
Tell the people what you feel.
Fuck the record and fuck the people.
It's the best opening.
It is. I love it. And the whole album's great. Lynn Strait's vocals remind me of... So where you've got the really aggressive rap type stuff of like Zach De La Rocha and people like that in rap metal, he's got a more sort of sing-songy kind
of... Yeah, he's really mellow.
It's closer to sort of Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
And it fits really fucking well. And I don't know. I mean, the guy from Head Planet Earth, or however you pronounce it this week, is sort of similar in some ways.
Yeah,
but
he's
not
got
quite
a kind
as
of
good.
Rolly kind of relaxed vibe to it. Yeah.
So anyway, obviously both bands had come to an end.
Yes.
So they formed The Start, who are an altogether completely different style. There you can still see the influences from the punk rock and the metal bits in there, and definitely the goth stuff, but essentially they're a pop band.
They're really
very
poppy.
Very much so.
Very polished.
In parts, it depends on the album. Initiation, the second album, less sort of polished, because that was a bit more punk rock. They were on Nitro Records at that point.
Yeah,
I think they're probably the unluckiest band in the world.
Which album was Wartime on?
That was on Chow Baby, which is their third full-length album. But I think they're the unluckiest band in the world, because the songs are amazing. They've got really, really good pop songs. And their Facebook group's got about 450 members. And they should be massive. I'm like an evangelist for The Start. I try and play them to as many people as possible. And it was when we first started having the idea for the podcast, they're one of the reasons I wanted to do a lesser known band.
So talk about them.
I can totally see you liking these, because you like these kind of very poppy artists that are also alternative.
Yeah.
I think her vocals, and I don't mean this to be a lazy comparison at all, but
I bet it's going to be.
But it's going to be very Gwen Stefani.
It's a very valid comparison. They have similar voices, particularly when Gwen Stefani's doing her more rock kind of singing.
But Amy has a harder, raspier edge to her voice, which I really liked, actually.
Well, if you'd have listened to more Human Waste Project than the tracks that we played you last time,
if I'd got the memo,
proper screamy vocals mixed in with, she's similar, like we were talking about in an earlier episode. She's got a similar kind of vibe to some of Kate Jane Garside's stuff.
Yeah, but she sounds less
definitely.
Like a small child.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
Fucking hell, Tracy.
Sorry.
Tracy's just
wrecking
the place and throwing pens around.
I saw a review somewhere that someone comparing them to Garbage. I didn't see that at all.
They toured with Garbage.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Amy Echo used to... I don't know why every single time I say Amy, I say her surname. Amy Echo.
Because you don't want to sound like Tracy in the PJ Harvey podcast.
Yeah, Polly. So yeah, but yeah, they toured America with Garbage, and I'm sure I've seen footage of Amy singing on stage with Shirley Manson, sort of joining them on stage. But they, I can definitely see that comparison, particularly for Shakedown.
Yeah.
Because it is an alternative rock album with massive pop songs and a load of electronic elements. There's synths all over it.
And it's got more of an 80s vibe than Garbage, though.
It's more new
Garbage
wave.
Garbage is definitely 90s, and they will always sound 90s.
They will always sound of their time when they were recorded, because they were so cutting edge at the time.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Which is what happens when you get three producers in a band.
Exactly.
Now, this is what surprises me, you saying that you think the start should be bigger than they are, because while Garbage were very much an indie band of the 90s, they were niche.
Garbage?
They were massive at the same time.
But their sound
isn't. I can see what you mean.
But what I was about to say is the start, the songs that I've listened to, they're quite commercial.
Some are, yeah.
Really quite immediately commercial pop. And so, if they
remember,
were to be played...
Remember, I love Kesha and Lady Gaga.
Well, exactly, that's why I was saying that I totally see why you like this, because you dig commercial pop.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
But I do you see, it's just called... I love fucking pop as well. I don't want to be tarred with this. Ian listens to metal and nothing but metal.
Ian fucking loves Taylor Swift.
Ian does love Taylor Swift.
Yes.
I like the way you said that in the third person.
Yes. I need to talk about myself in the third person more, because I think it makes Ian sound much cooler. But yeah, like, I really, really appreciate poppy songwriting. I think it's a gift, and I think not many people have it.
Yeah.
And when you have got the gift to write songs that immediate and catchy, but still that can affect you and hit emotions... You should be fucking lauded for that.
Well, that's the thing. And Gorgeous, off the first, the start album, Shakedown, should have been a fucking massive hit single. It's absolutely amazing. But each of their albums has been released on a different label. They don't tend to stick around, because, and I think a lot of that's probably to do with the sales.
So there's no coherent plan going on.
And it's, I don't think that they have had the support that, you know, to get massive airplay, particularly in America, where all of the radio stations are owned by Clear Channel, you have to have money to get the pluggers to play the records in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, to get on MTV.
Just doesn't go down like it used to, does it? People don't pick up on you because you're good now.
Yeah.
Which is just shit.
I think it still happens in some, but there's a hell of a lot of luck in there, which is why I think that The Start are probably the unluckiest band in the world.
Yeah, because they've got the songs.
Exactly.
That song, the underwater song, it's quite anthemic, really. Yeah.
Well, that's the one that's got kind of... That's on Initiation.
Right.
And one of the reasons I put that on there, because I thought you would like it, because the guitars are very My Bloody Valentine.
We were meant to not be doing that, Colin.
I know, but it's Tracy.
You have to occasionally
pander to Tracy, I think.
Yeah.
Otherwise, she doesn't bother to listen to the things you've sent in the Dropbox.
Yeah, sorry.
Didn't work, did it, Colin?
I tell you why I missed the memo. Because in that group chat we have for the podcast messages, you two just talk about guitar pedals too often, and I miss...
Well, it's because it's life.
Pod messages.
Right, okay. Me and Colin will have a separate talking about guitar shit.
Yeah.
Chat, and we'll only put podcast relevant messages
and
in
then
that
you'll miss all the cool stuff about delay pedals.
Oh no,
and all the memes.
And then I'll be lonely. Okay, I'll just pay more attention. No, the underwater song, the commercial bit of that, the end of the first verse, there's a stop, and then you get her that intake of breath, and that translates so well. I mean,
you're almost speechless, which is good.
Gesticulating wildly.
Grasping
for words. Shit for audio, but it's good that it affected you like that.
It's a really immediate song.
Yeah. I mean, my probably favourite release that they've put out is the EP, which has been under a couple of different names, because it was initially... There was a three-track EP called the 1-2-3-4 EP, first of all. Then... It was expanded and...
Was it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6?
No, it was just called The Start EP.
Okay.
Then when they signed to Nitro Records, they re-released it as Death by a Satellite, which is one of the other tracks on there. I bought it from one of the live shows, so I bought it as the start EP, so I always think of it as a self-titled.
Yeah. Was that when they supported?
Strung Out.
Yes.
Yes, which was an awesome gig. Didn't watch Strung Out because I was spending the entire gig talking to Jamie about his Univox Univox High Flyer guitar, which is fucking amazing.
Yeah, same. I wandered out and I was like, oh my god, you were in Snot as well. Oh my god. And he was like, all right.
Well, I
calm the fuck down, dude.
That gig, I went wearing a Human Waste Project T-shirt. Amy Echo walked off stage, saw me, went old school, and came and gave me a hug straight away, which was awesome.
Aww.
She's nice. Lovely.
Met her a few times. She sold me stuff as well. The start patch on my.
They were running their own merch store because they were. I
bought that Star Wars.
I've got that shirt. It's actually part of a quilt that we've got now because it doesn't fit me anymore.
Yeah, mine doesn't fit me anymore either.
But actually, no, that one still does.
It's the expansion of.
It's the one with Eno the dog on it.
That's
another
quilt
band.
Been repurposed. I noticed that hangs in front of your vinyl collection.
No, that's a different one.
How many Start shirts do you have, Colin?
No, that's not got a Start one. I've got
different quilt.
Two the Start T-shirts
to keep small hands away from
the
vinyl.
We've had to put a big sheet with T-shirts
because apparently electrifying it is not fair.
You're not allowed to put an electric fence up to stop a 2-year-old getting on the vinyl. No, that's I tried, but apparently I'm not allowed.
Seems like bullshit to me. How else will they learn?
I know, but that gig we ended up. I was standing talking to the band for all evening, ended up with them giving me a backstage pass, and I helped them carry their gear out at the end of the night.
Oh, that's cool.
It was awesome. I've met them. They did another tour when over here for Chow Baby.
Why did I not know about that?
I'm sure I told you about it. I went to two dates on that. I went to Birmingham and Stoke.
Stoke?
They played Stoke Sugar Mill. Which is a really good venue.
Is it?
Stoke Sugar Mill's great because, and I've not been there for probably about nearly 10 years, so it may have changed since then. There is a platform on the left-hand side of the venue for people my height to stand on.
Ah.
And I can still see things. It's great.
Brilliant.
And it's a nice, really small club.
Like that
venue.
Angled, cushioned platform in the Institute for leaning on.
Yes.
Which is my favourite thing about that venue. Forearm cushions.
Are the Starts still going?
Yes. So they'd not done anything for absolutely ages.
What's that about?
Well, Jamie's been pretty busy. Jamie Miller is... So he's currently the drummer in Bad Religion. Also the drummer and one of the guitarists in Annual Nose by the Trailer Dead. He plays drums in Berlin. As in Take My Breath Away, Berlin.
Really?
Yeah. He's a session drummer. So he works with loads of people.
There's no such thing anymore as a drummer that's in one band.
No, not at all.
And they always complicate... Jamie, stop it. If you're listening, which I suspect you may be, just do another fucking Start album, thanks.
I think they're working on it because they did a show late last year, which was brilliant. I loved it because even though I couldn't get there because it was in LA...
It's a commute enough.
I was nearly looking at plane tickets, but my wife would have absolutely killed me.
Yeah. Relationships get in the way of so many things.
So much like fun.
Gigs and new guitars. So.
But the community on the forum.
Yeah.
Leading up to that was really, really lovely with everybody sort of talking. You could see loads of people organising, staying over at people's flats and stuff like that.
Oh, that's
lived
cool.
In the local area. And then they've put out a 7-inch single, double A side with Yvonne DiCarlo and Magic Number, which is two new songs.
Yeah.
And they're really good. Yvonne DiCarlo in particular, it's really good sort of post punk rocker.
Some really nice post-punk, high, wiry guitar lines in some of the songs. That one, Los Angeles.
Yes.
Really high guitar line. Yeah. And again in Trinity.
Trinity is my favourite song by the Staff.
Really terse vocals. Was it? And just, yeah, wiry guitars.
Where, that gig where I first saw them when they were supporting Strung Out, that we were talking about, where we were talking to them in the merch store, I bought the Start EP there, and I was talking to...
I wish I'd bought that instead of fucking...
Apache.
Metal Goes fucking Scar. Metal Goes Punk.
Did you buy... Was that the compilation CD that Strung Out were selling? Amazing.
I mean, that was... It was pretty good, but... Yeah. Yeah, I wish I'd...
But I was talking to them while they were over on that tour. I think part of the reason that they'd scheduled it was so that they could go and see The Cure doing their trilogy show in Berlin, which was where The Cure played Pornography, Disintegration and Blood Flowers. And we were sort of talking about that because I think they'd just gone to it the week before.
Yeah.
And Amy said, well, look, if you're a big Cure fan, you're really going to like Trinity, the last track on there, because it's very, very Cure influenced.
I liked that a lot.
Sort of spacey, new wave, echoey noises. And it's fantastic. That whole EP is great. It's only 6 tracks. But and it's on Spotify. It's got Death by a Satellite EP on there, so everybody should listen to it.
Basically, what we're saying is just
listen to the
Start. Go on Spotify and just listen to the Start, and then buy their things.
And then, go on their. You'll have to go to their Facebook group and join it to get. Because their website isn't up anymore. But there's links on there to their shop, and you can buy their 7-inch single there.
Or buy enough.
You can
stuff,
buy it as a download.
They might come and do a UK tour.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Because. But going back to the community sort of thing that I was just saying, they're one of these bands that not very many people have heard of, but when you do find people, they fucking love them. And the same with Human Waste Project.
Yeah.
I've just randomly met people and just been talking about stuff, and we've discovered that we both love Human Waste Project, or we both love The Start. There's a guy called Paul who used to run Coventry Rehearsal Studios.
Right.
Where I used to rehearse with my old band, and he was a massive Human Waste Project fan, and I used to talk to him about it. And then I started a job. I was only there for about 3 months a couple of years back.
Yeah.
And there was another girl in the office who was not only a fan of Human Waste Project in The Start, but played drums in the band that supported them when I saw them in Birmingham. Violet Beauregard. So she gave me a Violet Beauregard badge that she'd managed to find kicking around at home.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I bought the CD at the gig. Stuff. They're kind of riot girly kind of thing. They were ace.
Yeah, cool.
But yeah. Basically, The Start are brilliant. They've got amazing songs. Go and listen to them.
Yes.
But before you listen to them, listen to us talking about The Smiths.
Yes, in a second. So
we'll do that now.
Okay.
The Smiths were an indie band formed in Manchester in 1982 by Johnny Marr and Stephen Patrick Morrissey. The lineup was Morrissey on vocals, Marr on guitar, Andrew Rourke on bass, and Mike Joyce on drums.
They should have kept the rhyme scheme up, shouldn't they? Marr on guitar. Somebody called Dave Ace on bass.
Mr. Bum on the drums.
Sorry, Tracy, continue.
They had another member, Craig Gannon, who joined in 1985, initially replacing Rourke on bass, but switching to rhythm guitar when Rourke was reinstated in the band just 2 weeks later.
Yes.
They only released 4 studio albums in their career. 4 studio albums, which was The Smiths in 84, Meat Is Murder in 85, The Queen Is Dead in 86, and Strange Ways Here We Come in 87. A lot of people consider Hatful of Hollow as an album. It was a compilation.
It's up there in their canon.
Absolutely.
I would say that Hatful of Hollow is in their top three albums, at least.
The reason people think of it as an album is because it was a singles collection that had so many singles on it that aren't on other albums.
Exactly.
So it stands alone.
And
as
like
a
an
recording.
Album,
yeah.
I'd be happy
it's a compilation.
And it's a better album than Strange Ways. A better album than Meters Murder.
Because they released 19 singles, 10 of which weren't on albums.
Yeah.
Which is a dick.
Well, it was the old 60s model.
Yeah.
You know, but bands didn't used to... You used to release a single and you had an album. And it used to be seen that it was a rip-off to put the singles on an album as well because people would be buying it twice.
And of those 19, 16 of them were top 40.
Yeah.
Top 40 placed, so... But... So I saw them... The first time I saw them was Top of the Pops, 1983. This Charming Man.
I thought you were going to say saw them live. Did you see them live?
No, I never did.
About to get really, really jealous then.
God, no, I didn't. But seeing them that first time on Top of the Pops, I just can't describe
was that hand in
how
glove?
I felt. Yes. Sorry. This Charming Man.
Okay, yeah.
Hand in glove, when they first released it with Morrissey singing, didn't chart.
Yeah.
So that wouldn't be... No, is this Charming Man?
No, you're right. That was the one where they got the flowers sort of everywhere. That is an iconic Top of the Pops performance.
Absolutely. And
I've not seen it.
It's... yes.
I was just instantly in love. I mean, Morrissey was so fucking beautiful. Was so fucking beautiful.
And you ignored the other two just like Morrissey and Mar did?
Yeah, pretty much. But then I taped the album from an older friend when it came out in 84.
Home taping is killing music.
Indeed.
But we all did it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Death.
And that album was everything. I mean, the music, the lyrics. And it was everything about them. The dress style, Morrissey's hips, the unbuttoned shirt, Mar's hair, the flowers, the artwork. I mean, just can't. They meant so much. And a lot of people talk about them now as an 80s revolution set against a grim northern backdrop of Thatcher's Britain. But I was 13 and life was pretty simple, listening to Duran Duran and Tears for Fears and Aztec Camera. But the Smiths changed everything, and it was the beginning of indie for me.
Was that before you heard Jesus and Mary Chain then?
Yes.
Okay.
By a couple of years,
so that,
maybe.
That was kind of like your Guns N' Roses for me. It was like your
interesting
watershed.
Comparison, but yes, a watershed moment.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, by the time Hatful of Hollow came out, I was a devoted fan. I would have bought that from Birmingham Virgin Megastore.
Yeah.
Because at 13, I was a bit too shy to have gone into any of the other city centre stores. But the Smiths were a way out of the mainstream chart music. You know, I'd never heard anything.
But it was still charting.
I'd never heard
time,
or seen anything like them.
Yeah.
That
first album in particular is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I love the Smiths. The album, The Smiths.
Yeah.
See, I've mostly only listened to... Well, have only listened to singles, but... I don't know. I like to keep The Smiths in their little box.
Okay.
Nothing ever happened after The Smiths. The Smiths did things, and then The Smiths stopped doing things.
Yeah.
And I like it. I like it a lot.
Johnny Marr did some very good things after The Smiths.
I heard a Modest Mouse track with him on, and I didn't like it.
That's not one of the
better
ones.
I didn't like the Modest Mouse.
No.
Oh, what was the other thing that he was in as well?
Well, he's done loads, but the recent thing that you wouldn't like is the Cribs.
Yes,
yeah.
Cribs.
Didn't like the Cribs stuff either.
Proving my theory that all modern The bands suck.
He was in The, in fact.
I was going to say he was in The.
So, double. Double whammy
for you. He played with Billy Bragg.
Pet Shop Boys.
Pet Shop Boys, Talking Heads. He was on Naked, the final Talking Heads album.
Ah.
He played guitar on Nothing But Flowers, which is the really jangly...
Yeah.
Like, he is a fucking great guitarist.
Yes. Although I don't actually know what he did with Beck.
No, I don't.
I would like to have seen The Smiths live just to see how few of the guitar lines made it into the live performance, because it is always at least three guitar parts interweaving. It must have been difficult.
They were a lot rawer live, obviously. Later performances, they did have Craig Gannon on second guitar.
Yes.
But there's some pretty good live stuff on YouTube.
There's a lot.
The Rock Palast, which is a German music venue where they used to do a TV show and used to televise it. So there's loads of Rock Palast gigs for various different bands. And the Smiths at Rock Palast is really, really good.
I was watching something on YouTube last night with them from Derby Assembly Rooms.
The Derby Assembly Rooms gig is... I was going to put that. It's... they are the only band in the world that I can think of who have an iconic gig that happened in Derby.
Yeah, I reckon.
Because on the YouTube thing, someone, the person who posted it actually said, oh, this was probably at the Hacienda or something. Oh, edit, I've just found out it was Derby.
Yeah. And that actually, they're a bit all over the place in that gig. I think it was a bit of a shambolic gig, but because it was recorded, and I think there was a radio broadcast of it, if I remember correctly, obviously not from the time because I was like three, but I'm fairly certain that there was a radio broadcast that was circulated as a bootleg for years.
But then Johnny Marr also had his own kind of solo project, Johnny Marr and the Healers, and him singing, but I don't know, I didn't like him singing. It broke the spell. He shouldn't be singing.
I don't mind his singing. He's not got a bad voice, but he's not got a... Whereas Morrissey has an incredibly distinctive voice.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it sounds a bit weird when he's doing How Soon Is Now or something like that.
Mm.
And it's Johnny Marr singing with his quite normal voice rather than Morrissey's weird yelps. Mm.
But Smiths, I mean, I don't know, they had such critical acclaim from all over the place. Noel Gallagher, not that I generally agree with him, he said they were it. They were as important as The Jam, the Sex Pistols and the Beatles.
No, they were more important than The Jam because The Jam could fuck off.
Yeah. Also, I don't believe for a second that anything was more important than the Beatles to Noel Gallagher.
The real people were.
You say this every time and we always
I
don't know who the real people are.
You always shrug at that.
Are they just really much worse Beatles copyists or something?
They're a Liverpool band who predate Oasis, and Oasis really, really ripped them off.
Is that because they ripped off the Beatles?
Well, yes.
So just the answer would have been yes, then, to be honest.
Okay. There's a famous clip from the Whistle Test in 1986, Andy Kershaw introducing them, and he says, "Last night, I sat down and tried to make a list of the truly great British bands of the 1980s, bands whose recordings and influence would endure. After nearly an hour, I was staring at a sheet of paper with only one name on it."
Depeche Mode.
Yes.
The Cure.
But that was how we introduced them.
It's a good introduction, it's just bullshit.
It's bullshit that they're the only band, but they are definitely one of.
Oh yeah.
The most enduring I'm not going to argue bands. That.
Just... But I could probably fill at least a top 10.
Yeah.
But in 1986, could you?
The Cure would be on there.
Yeah.
Depeche Mode would be on there.
Oh, I didn't like them until after that.
It's not.
Well, that's it. I'm
they were still there, and they were still very important.
Some of it, though, you would put them on that list retrospectively. Later on, you'd have added it to it. You might not have put them at the time.
He didn't say his favourite bands, so there would be...
No, he didn't.
The Jesus and Mary Chain, I would put on that list. Massively influential. I think they're shit, but I'm in a minority.
Yes, you are. Back in your box, probably. But... So, we're shooting down your arguments, Tracy. Please continue to harp on about how amazing they are.
Well, I will.
We're not arguing with that point.
No.
I will, and I'll quote from someone else who was massively influenced by them. Bernard Butler from Suede.
Yeah. Obviously.
Yes, of course. And I was watching the Rough Trade documentary about them. And Butler kind of sums up, I think, what it meant to people when they heard them for the first time. He said there was a big difference between This Charming Man and Club Tropicana. A big fucking difference.
Yeah.
And it meant the world to me that I could explain what that difference was to almost everybody that I met. And that's the thing about Smiths fans then. It was this devotion thing. And you would tell everybody. And it was like the t-shirt that you wore.
That has endured, though, hasn't it? Because Morrissey fans that have stuck with him through him being a fucking bellend, really fucking obsessed.
I had super evangelical thoughts about him. I remember one of the first, in fact, it was the first Henry Rollins spoken word thing I ever heard, right? And it's his bit about bands having audiences that they didn't ask for. And he's like, right. You've got Morrissey out there singing his songs, and he just looks down and in front of him is just line after line of weeping teenage boys. Yeah, that sounds about right. And his response was, that makes me want to go listen to Van Halen eat meat and fuck in the street, which is clearly not what Morrissey's response was.
No.
Morrissey's response was to attempt to throw everyone who isn't white out of the country and become a massive bigot.
Yeah.
I find it ironic because he'd clearly have hated himself as well. Like, he must look back at his old videos and go, you fucking arsehole. Yes. Which is... like, that's bad.
Well,
right?
he's
to take such a left turn that you must hate your previous.
It's more of a right turn. An extreme right turn.
But you're right about the fans, because the fans are still so obsessed. They cling to him so much that they'll be in complete denial.
I remember
and they will defend
ago.
Him to the death.
And he must hate that as well. Like, he's just there in the front row going,
I don't know.
I bet you voted Remain, you pricks.
I think he probably sees them as validating his toxic fucking opinions.
Can we also approach the fact that up until fairly recently he was still wearing leather shoes and belts,
yep,
because he couldn't find anything that was sartorially elegant enough for him. Fucking hypocrites.
But close all of the burger stalls in the festival.
Yes, while I... put my fucking nice leather shoes on.
But no, with the Morrissey fans, years and years ago, when the old Birmingham Academy that used to be the Hummingbird, he was playing there, and it was when I was at uni in Birmingham, and I used to get the bus pass there. And I remember one day sitting on the top deck of the bus at the front, going past a massive crowd of Smiths fans all dressed up.
I remember you telling me this story.
Massive crowd of Morrissey fans. I was just sitting there going, wouldn't it be really ironic if this double-decker bus crashed into them? But yeah, to be fair, although obviously nowhere near as good as the Smiths, he's had a couple of decent solo singles.
No, that's the thing. The songs I've heard have been catchy. Like, he hasn't lost it.
Musically, yes. Yeah, Bengalian platforms. Aye. Is fucking...
do you
horrific.
Know, confession time, I...
you're actually Morrissey, fuck.
Shit.
Sorry, carry on.
I don't own a single solo Morrissey album.
I had...
never even bought Viva Hate.
No, I've heard Viva Hate. I've got a compilation of his early singles.
Nope, didn't even buy.
Which I think was some budget compilation type thing that I don't think was... he'd sanctioned it kind of thing. Which I bought for Suede Head, which I do think is a really good track.
It is.
Production's terrible. The guitar sound is the thinnest, weediest... you know, if Johnny Marr had recorded it, the riff would probably be quite similar, but it would have tone.
And 86 other guitar lines.
Yes. Every Day's Like Sunday I quite like.
Yeah.
And...
he did have some great singles, but I never bothered buying the album.
Well,
it's a bit late to bother now.
I bought You Are the Quarry, because that was...
Because you'd have to be seen in public buying Morrissey.
Buying a Morrissey,
yeah. That's the problem.
Exactly.
But You Are...
and I don't think I would now.
I did quite like You Are the Quarry, because it had got First the Gang to Die on it.
Yeah.
It had got Irish Blood, English Heart, which when you... go back and listen to the lyrics, are a little bit problematic in parts. It's almost a UKIP anthem. So he can still fuck off.
But yeah, like, it must suck. Like, it must suck for Morrissey fans now. It must suck for you. You clearly are really sad about the fact that someone that you love dearly has turned into such an arsehole. Like,
And I know people who it's become even more of a problem for, and...
like, I understand, because obviously there was the whole Phil Anselmo thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I couldn't listen to Pantera for ages. Then I, like, saw the post from Pepper Keen and going, it's bullshit. he is not a racist. I've heard an interview with Rex Brown going, he's not that guy. Mm. He's just a fucking idiot. And I'm okay again now.
But it's like
there's
you
no
said,
coming back from Morrissey.
I've
is
put
there?
The Smiths in a little box, and I have separated that from Morrissey.
Yeah.
And I'm keeping them there in their little box. And
because
and I'd never ever want a reunion. It's
no, because
it would be the worst thing in the world.
If you had a reunion with 80s Morrissey, that's fine.
Well, it's never going to happen anyway.
Well, no,
for how Morrissey and to some extent Marr, because they're in partnership on this, treated Mike Joyce and Andy Rourke. They were really fucking treated badly.
Yeah,
you know,
it was a very bitter battle.
The rhythm section in the Smiths is really fucking good, and they're really important to the songs.
Yeah,
the drum and the bass drive it along, while you've got the melodies over the top from the vocals and the guitar. But it wouldn't have the energy without the drums and the bass. And they did write those parts.
But the thing is, everyone focused on Morrissey and Marr, didn't they?
Exactly.
So it's going to be easy to develop a bit of an ego.
But
you already had an ego, which I have zero doubt that Morrissey had.
Yeah. Mm.
Then it's just going to turn you into...
I mean, the first time that Andy Rourke was sacked, he was sacked by Morrissey putting a post-it note on his car.
Yeah.
Which said, "Andy, you have left the Smiths. Goodbye and good luck."
What the fuck?
Admittedly, he was fired for taking heroin when they were a very sort of anti-drug band. But he was back in the band after a couple of weeks, like Tracy said earlier.
Yeah.
And then they kept Craig Gannon on as a sort of... He has not put his phone on airplane mode.
No.
I think one of the things about the Smiths, they're unique as an indie band because... they didn't sound like anybody.
No.
And even
they
though
they still don't, really.
And even though they've influenced many other bands, there isn't another band who really sounds like the Smiths.
No, you can hear the influence massively.
Some, yeah.
But at the same time, you can still hear the influence on the Smiths from many things that came. I mean, Johnny Marr's guitar playing owes a hell of a lot to the really sort of clean, fast-picked... arpeggiated African pop music. There's a sort of style of music called High Life.
Right.
So there's bands like the Bundu Boys, Kanda Bongo Man, who I fucking love. It's really, really joyful sort of pop songs with really clean guitar parts. And
it's going off on a John Peel tangent about the Bundu Boys now.
Oh, the Bundu Boys. Kanda Bongo Man's even better, and John Peel loved it. But yeah, the if you listen to stuff like that, you can totally hear where the guitar parts for This Charming Man came from. And then at the same time, you've got there's a lot of rockabilly influence in his guitar playing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff like Iggy Pop. I heard a story on... he was on Adam Buxton's podcast.
Right.
This was when he'd just released his latest autobiography, which I've not read.
I haven't read it yet.
Stories in it where he was talking about when he wrote, I think it was William, It Was Really Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And he was sitting around at home playing his guitar one day. And he just came up with this riff, and he knew that he wouldn't remember it, but he'd got no way of recording it himself.
Yeah.
And he knew that Morrissey had got a tape recorder. And this was, they'd only known each other for a couple of weeks at this point. So he immediately got on the phone, checked that Morrissey was in, got his girlfriend Angie, who's now his wife, to drive him, and he was sitting there in the back of the car with his guitar in his hand playing this riff the whole time there so he didn't forget it. And she was a really big Iggy Pop fan, and she was like, make it sound more like Iggy. So he started sort of playing it in the style of the rhythm from Gimme Danger, and it turned into the riff that it was. And he got to Morrissey's house, got the tape recorder, quickly recorded it, and then Morrissey wrote lyrics to it over the weekend.
Do you know, the way they recorded, actually, the way they wrote songs, they never, apart from about one instance, apparently, they didn't ever write together.
No, yeah, yeah.
Marr would tape it, give Morrissey a cassette.
And he'd come back the next...
and then...
a couple of days later with the...
and put the lyrics over it, then they'd teach the... and then they'd play it together as a band.
Yeah. But the bass parts and the drum part would then be worked out in the studio and would be very, very important, Morrissey. prick.
But they were absolutely prolific. They'd have songs that they'd basically write and record within a couple of days.
Yeah, look, another bit in that podcast, he was talking about how in their like first two or three rehearsals, they wrote about five or six of their really big singles.
Yeah.
And for a band, I mean, normally when a band first starts out, you're just jamming and making it with, you're trying to find your feet.
Yeah.
For a while. For sure. And they just went straight in there.
Oh, totally. I mean, in the very first meetings of Mara and Morrissey, Mara had already got in his head, I want us to sign to Rough Trade.
Yeah.
And as soon as they'd got a demo tape together, Mar went down to the Rough Trade London offices and just hung around
and
gave it to Jeff Travis. Yeah, he gave it to him with the words something like, "You won't have heard anything like this before." And this was on like a Friday afternoon. Jeff Travis rang him back by Monday morning and said it was the best thing he'd heard for ages, yeah. And he wanted to sign them, and you know, that was it. He signed them up for a 4-album deal. Well, and as we know, that's all we ever got.
Yeah, but to be honest, that's good.
Well, yeah.
If they were still going, you know, they made 4 pretty good albums. You know, 2 of them and the compilations much better than 2 of the others. I couldn't listen to Meat Is Murder for years. Just put me off with the fact that the title track, but there are some good tracks on there.
There are. It's my least favourite album, as it happens. Although I did have the Meat Is Murder T-shirt.
I think Strange Ways.
Are you a vegetarian?
I was. All good little Smiths fans, I turned veggie overnight around the age of 15, I think.
And your parents were like, "For fuck's sake!"
Yeah, totally. Oh, this will never last. I was vegetarian for quarter of a decade.
What broke you?
A quarter of a decade?
Just out of curiosity. Was it bacon?
No.
Ah, interesting. That's usually the one.
It wasn't even... It was more about economics, actually. Okay. Let's not bother with this one. It's really nothing to do with the discussion.
The thing about vegetarianism is it's fine as long as it is an individual person's choice.
Yes. Absolutely.
And you try and force it on people.
Whereas...
Absolutely. I never got on my soapbox about... Well, I might have done when I was a teenager, but...
Amy Echo and Jamie Miller, I believe, are both vegan.
I had no idea.
Exactly. Morrissey tells you.
But he doesn't.
Morrissey shuts down all of the meat vans in the vicinity.
I would love to go to a gig and just throw sausages at him for the entire thing. I could just get to the front and just like.
It's like, it's nothing to do with you being a vegetarian, it's to do with you being a cunt.
Yeah.
But the cracks started to show, though, when they got around to doing Strange Ways. I mean, they'd never had a manager. All their dealings with Rough Trade were Morrissey and Mar talking to them directly, and basically Mar was their manager, and it put a huge strain on him.
Didn't they split before that was even released, so they never actually toured it?
Yeah, I mean, Mar said he wanted to take a break from the band, right. And that didn't go down very well.
Well, he went and joined the Pretenders for a bit.
But I think Mar said the last straw. He hated Morrissey's obsession with covering 60s pop artists.
Sandy Shaw and all that kind of
thing. And Cilla Black. And he said, "I didn't form a group to perform Cilla Black songs."
That seems fair, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Do you know, me and Tracy went to Ian's favourite band, Arab Strap, gig in Manchester a while back. And while we were there on that day, we went to the
Salford Lads Club.
Salford Lads Club, which is in the photo of the Queen is Dead on the inside cover, which is every Smiths fan has to go there at some point and get a photo.
The pilgrimage.
But what I didn't realise until later on, the actual venue that we were in, Manchester Ritz, that's where the Smiths played their second ever gig.
Was it?
So we had 2 Smiths locations on that
day. Oh, right, because the first one was... Must have been the Hacienda, I'd have thought.
I don't know.
They played there several times. Loads,
but and that's just down the road. But yeah, funniest thing I can think of about the Smiths, I used to DJ at a club night years ago called Slackers,
right?
Which was a sort of indie club night. But the, one of,
God, the... who was that guy you DJed with? Will.
Will, yeah.
He was gorgeous.
Wasn't he a bellend?
Yes.
He looked like Graham Coxon, though.
So...
Oh, God, he was gorgeous.
Yeah, this is the thing, though. It was a bit of an ego trip. And he hadn't DJed before. But used to put himself as the headline DJ act. And I was a pretty experienced DJ, and I was put on for the first half hour.
I met you at the last ever Slackers night.
Was the John Peel one the last ever one?
I don't... Well, I certainly didn't go.
I think we did some more afterwards.
Did you?
Not at the assembly rooms.
Oh, well, I didn't get the moment.
Weekly one. But anyway, yeah, so one of the big nights, I think it was might have been the first one, where it was a big sold-out crowd, and he'd made a really big thing about it. It's like, I'm definitely going to play for the last song of the night... There is a light that never goes out. It's going to be a big sort of transcendental moment. Everyone's going to be hugging everyone. It's going to be a beautiful, beautiful thing. So he plays the track before it, gets it all queued up, and presses it on auto thing, so like auto play, so the end of the track finishes and it will go straight into it. Wanders off out into the corridor to congratulate himself, basically.
Oh dear.
And last night I dreamed that somebody loved me started playing because he'd queued up the wrong track and it was the slowest, dirgiest track.
Oh no! What a disaster!
Oh, it was beautiful.
I mean, last night I dreamt it was
beautiful. And it was too far away to fix it as well.
Yeah.
This is why you never trust autoplay.
Exactly.
Why you always are there and you always fucking fix it.
Exactly.
God damn.
But yeah, I still remember that. It was so funny.
I mean, There Is a Light. It's such a fucking anthem.
Yeah.
Such an anthem.
So many of their singles, and their album tracks too. They've got some absolute. I mean, completely blanked on first. Reel Around the Fountain.
Yeah.
First track on the first album. I don't think that was released as a single. It's not on the singles compilation that I was my first Smith CD, anyway.
No, it's not.
Such a beautiful song. I also... Oh, there's just so many that are great. I even really like Suffer Little Children, which is the most depressing song in the world because it's about the Moors murders.
Wow.
And features the sound of a woman crying throughout the second half of the song.
I mean, I was fascinated with that case as a teenager because of that song.
Okay.
A slightly morbid interest,
yeah,
in it. But it's such an affecting song. And over such a beautifully delicate guitar.
The guitar part is fantastic.
And on the side, I refer to my significant other as Sweetness fairly often. And it is the Smith.
You're only joking.
Yes. Brilliant.
It should be noted that I am the big mouth that strikes again.
Yes, yes, definitely. Placebo's cover, that's not very good.
Shocker.
I love Placebo, but it's not a very good cover.
I don't.
Oh,
but
dear, I'll
acknowledge that their Kate Bush cover is astonishing, but yeah, other than that...
I'll tell you what is bothered. What I did find quite entertaining. Have either of you guys heard of Mexrissi?
Nope.
Is a Mexican mariachi band covering mostly Morrissey solo songs, but a few Smith songs.
That sounds amazing.
It's really good. It's ace. Morrissey is absolutely massive in Mexico, apparently. I think he is in the whole of like Central and Southern America.
I bet he hates that.
I know he's... I'm sure he's had sort of...
Oh wait, no.
Lyrics
he really
fetishizing sort of
fucking loves
Mexican
national
immigrants.
Pride, doesn't he?
Yeah.
So yeah, like
yeah.
Now cover versions.
As long as people stay where they are meant to be.
I really like that Daniel Merriweather cover.
Oh, the
Mark Ronson. Yeah, you don't like it, do you?
I don't. I like a lot of stuff that Mark Ronson does. He's a great producer. I thought his cover of Just, which we forgot to mention
in the radio,
was great.
That
basically
was brilliant,
he did a funk
actually.
Version. And then he's sort of gone for the same sort of style with the Stop Me track, but it's...
But I liked his voice on that. I mean, it's so different to the Smiths version, but...
Yeah.
I mean, that was the Smiths' last single, in fact.
I wonder if I don't like that, because my main memory of that cover is when... I was driving home from work and my car broke down for the third time that month and realised I had to get rid of it.
Maybe.
When that came out.
And what was the song? Oh God, which song did Jeff Buckley cover?
He did, I think he's done a couple. But
he's done I Know It's Over.
Yeah, he did a medley of Hallelujah with I Know It's Over, which is on Mystery
Him singing I Know It's Over is just so fucking gorgeous.
I'm sure he did a couple of others because the expanded live at Cheney double CD thing, it's got loads of covers on there. I'm sure there's another Smiths track on it.
Right, I don't know that.
Pissed On, goth metal band that I supported once.
You know they're touring again.
Yes, I know.
Fucking awful band name.
It was the late 90s and it was metal. Did a cover of Shoplifters of the World Unite. It wasn't brilliant.
No, I'm tempted to go and see them though, just because.
Yeah, sorry.
What the fuck was that song? Grey Flap.
Grey Flap's an amazing song.
Terrible song title though.
Yeah. Goes with the band name.
Yes, it does.
I think we probably need to sort of wrap it up round about there.
Yes,
you possibly do. I could go on forever. But.
Yes. Well, I could talk a lot more about the Smiths, but we need to record our next episode. So.
Yes, the next episode will be T.
I'm really glad you said that because I was struggling to remember what letter came next in the alphabet.
That's what you get for doing the bands.
Yes.
In the S episode.
Yes.
And so, guess what, Pop Kids?
Terrorvision.
That'd be good. Oh, we should do that later on.
And terror.
I think
double terror episode.
Well, this is a special episode.
Television
for the hashtag Team Tracy people on Twitter, because Tracy has chosen both of the bands on the next episode.
Fucking hell!
It's not as bad as you think, Ian.
So
I've done my homework.
Tracy, do you want to tell us who we're talking about next?
We will be doing Teenage Fan Club and Talking Heads.
Excellent.
Texas Hippie Coalition. They're a band.
That's a good
name. Fucking brilliant band name.
Fucking terrible though.
Okay. Oh, that's a shame. How disappointing.
I know, right?
That's like Atari Teenage Riot level of fantastic band name.
Yes, but Atari Teenage Riot are fantastic.
They are. So we've been We Dig Music. Bye.
Bye. Mr. Bum on the drum.